Baruch Hashem, we begin a new perek. That's the eighth perek, Kes HaMishtatfim, on Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph. And God willing, we'll be able to give a little bit of an introduction to this perek right now, before we start the perek. And we know that a person is not allowed to carry on Shabbos or on Yontif beyond Alpayim Amah from the Makom where he's Kona Shvisa. And this Alpayim Amah is called Chum Shabbos. So if a person takes up his Shvisa on Shabbos in a city, he can create a circle, so to speak, a circumference around the city, and that represents the end of the city, the Gvul Ha'ir, the boundaries of the city, and he counts 2,000 Amma outside the Gvul of the city. If, on the other hand, he was Shoves outside the city, then wherever he's Shoves, that becomes the middle point of a circumference of Alpayim Amma in every direction. If, for example, he leaves the city on Erev Shabbos, and he designates a Mazon Shtei Sudos, which is further away from the city, but within the Tchum of Alpayim Amma, he's Koveh Hishvisa there. And that applies even if he goes back to his city, and he finds himself in the city, B'Knisa Shabbos, nevertheless, anywhere within the radius of 2,000 Amma around the city, he could be Kone Shvisa, even though he's going to go back into his house for Shabbos. And wherever he puts his Mazon Shtei Sudos, that's where he placed it down. That's considered where he was Shoves, even though physically he is in the city, and that's called Erev Tchumen. So then, from the point of his Erev, he's allowed to go 2,000 Amma in each direction. All these are the laws that we discussed in the third parak, the fourth parak, the fifth parak of Masechta Eruvin. Our Mishnah is going to add and teach us that if many of the of his co-residents in the city want to go on Shabbos to a certain place, which is outside the Tchum of the city, then one of them could actually place down the Eruv Tchumen on behalf of all of them. Ketzad mishtatfim b'tchumin, the Mishnah says, if a person wants to be ma'arev, an erev tchumin on behalf of the rabbim, is meiniach es achovis, he sets up a barrel which has mazon shtei sudos, far out of the city, as long as within alpayim amma from the city, and it could be on any direction he chooses. V'yomer, he makes a declaration, ha'rezeh, L'chol b'nei ha'ir, I am placing this Erev down on behalf of the entire city, and l'chol mi sheyelech l'beis ha'ovel or l'beis ha'mishta, anyone in the city who has to travel on Shabbos to console the bereaved, or for the purpose of being mesameach the chos of a kala, that's all called l'tzorech mitzvah, they are allowed to go chutz le'ir, 2,000 Amma beyond the Erev Tchumen, which he set up on their behalf. Now we're going to have to analyze this Mishnah from the perspective of two issues. Number one, are we saying that an Erev Tchumen is only permitted for the sake of a Dvar Mitzvah? Like, for example, Nichum Avelim or Simchas Chos V'Kala. That's issue number one. And issue number two is whether or not Zoche L'Yodim Shelo B'Fanav could apply to an Erev Tchumen. If you remember the last mission that we learned in the previous perek, quoted Rabbi Yehuda saying that with regard to Erev Tchumen, he agrees to the Chachamim that Ad She Yodia Lehem, he has to notify the people for whom he's setting up this Erev, because maybe they want to go in a different direction. So how do we reconcile that? Now the Mishnah makes the following stipulation. V'chol, now the word chol means every member of the city, shekibel olav mib'od yom, that before Shabbos, he accepted the Eruv, meaning he's going to rely on this Eruv, he's going to go chutz l'tchum in the direction of 2,000 Amma outside the Eruv, mutter. But if someone amongst the members of the city did not accept this Eruv, he didn't say, I'm going to rely on this Eruv, but mishatechshach, if after Shabbos, the onset of Shabbos, he finds out at night that so-and-so put an Eruv at a certain place, then asur, she'en ma'arv mishatechshach, there's no such thing as an Eruv after nightfall on Shabbos, because to be kona shvisa through this Eruv tchumen of Mazon Shteisus, you have to do so before or at the onset of Shabbos. Once Kedusha Shabbos has already been generated, it entered, you know, we're already into the Kedusha of Shabbos, then his Makom Shvisa was established in the city. He cannot be Kona Shvisa at the place of the Eruv. Now this part of the Mishnah, the Sefer of the Mishnah, would seem to address our second issue that we mentioned before, that even though, let's say, I'm going to offer my own, you know, my own services to be the Good Samaritan, I set up an Eruv on your behalf, on behalf of all the members of the city, nevertheless, you cannot be Kona the Eruv based on Zoch and the Olam Shlo Befanov unless you indicated your approval before Shabbos, you Makabal Atzmo Lismoch Ala Eruv, because as we saw in the Mishnah, with regard to Erev Chatzeros, there's a win-win situation. You could say Zoch and the Olam Shlo Befanov. But with regard to Erev Tchumen, here there's a Hefsed element, a Chova, and the Tzad Chova is that he's going to be limited to that side and that direction where the Erev was set up, at the end of Alpayim Amma, for example, towards the east. And now he loses the Alpayim Amma towards the west. And we have a principle called Ein Chavin Liyadim Shalom Befadov, therefore we need Kibel Olav Mib'odnya. But now the Gemara is going to address the first issue that I mentioned earlier. Amar Rav Yosef, Ein Ma'arvin Ela L'dvar Mitzvah. When the Chachamim allowed a person to go beyond the Tchum of Shabbos because he set up an Eruv, they only did so for the sake of a mitzvah. And the Gemara says, "My Kamashma, I don't need Rav Yosef to formulate that because our Mishnah itself stipulates that condition." Tanina, it says in our Mishnah, "L'chol misha yelech lebeis ha'avel o lebeis ha'mishneh," that the Eruv is meaningful for someone who wants to fulfill any one of those two mitzvahs. And the Tana specified these two mitzvahs to tell us that the Eruv is only effective and only permitted for the sake of what we call Tzarkei Mitzvah. And that means that we have Rav Yosef in the Mishnah itself. Our answer is, Ma'od Tema, if we only had the Mishnah, we didn't have Rav Yosef, I might have thought, Orchei Demilsa Ketani, the Tanits only give me examples that are commonplace. That generally speaking, a person doesn't leave his house and go 2,000 Amma beyond the boundaries of the city. He will only be pressed to do so for the sake of a mitzvah. But in truth, you could have an Erev even for a Dvar Rishus. The Mishnah is only telling you what's the common situation. Called Mashmalon, therefore I need Rav Yosef to teach me. No, that the din is an Ein Ma'arvin Ela L'Dvar Mitzvah. Now, it would seem from Rashi, Divra Maskel Ein, that if he was Ma'arev L'Dvar Mitzvah, then he's not allowed to go chutz l'tchum for a dvar reshus. They're only going to allow him to benefit from this Eruv if and when he goes out relying on the Eruv for a dvar mitzvah. However, the Tur in Orach Chaim writes that once he already set up the Eruv for a dvar mitzvah, he can avail himself and enjoy the benefits of the Eruv even for a Dvar Rishus. In other words, he has to have in mind the motivation, l'chatchil, from the get-go, when he set up the Erev, that he's doing it for a Dvar Mitzvah. But once the Erev is set up, the Torah claims, he was Kona Shvisa in the Makom Erev. He can now go 2,000 Amma from that Makom Shvisa. That's where he was Kona Makom Shvisa. So therefore, if he relies on this Erev, even for a Dvar Rishus, he's going for a nice walk in the park, he is within the Tchum of Shabbos, because he was Kohen Shvi'is at that point. And this tour is against Rashi, because Rashi seems to indicate that the only time he could avail himself and rely on the Erev and go Chutz L'Tchum after he was Kohen Shvi'is is only for Dvar Mitzvah. Now, why is it that Ein Ma'arvim Elo Dvar Mitzvah? After all, a person, Mikra Din, is only allowed to go Alpayim Amor outside of where he is, B'Knisas HaShabbos. The Chachamim were Mekil, and they enacted a Takana, an institution of an Erev, that will allow a person to go Alpayim Amor from wherever he leaves his pas, his mazon shtei sudos. They didn't want to be mekil unless there was a pressing need to do so. And that's called b'makom tzorech mitzvah, ledvar mitzvah. And this we'll find in the interpretation of our Mishnah of Rabbeinu Yonason, that dafka, if he sets up a pas, then eno ma'arav el ledvar mitzvah. However, says Rabbeinu Yonason, there's another option of setting up an Eruv outside of, meaning within the Tchum of Shabbos, but allowing him to go beyond the Tchum of Shabbos, and that does not require a pass. We can circumvent the Mazon Shtei Sudos of the Eruv, and we can set up an Eruv with Raglav, meaning that he goes Chutz La'ir on Erev Shabbos, and he's Kohen Shvi'isa, where he is at the time of the onset of Shabbos. Says Rabbeinu Yonason, in that case, he's allowed to do so and be Kohen Shvi'isa, even for the sake of Dvar Rishus. We don't need that condition to be fulfilled, that he's doing so for the sake of a Dvar Mitzvah. Why? Says Rabbeinu Yonason, this is not a kula, this is not some sort of new enactment that would allow a person to go chutz l'tchum alpayim amo by setting up an eruv. This is me'ikar dino, meaning, I mean, we're hearing vibrations, so to speak, of the tour here in Rabbeinu Yonason. Rabbeinu Yonason is saying that when you're Kohen Shvi'isa Baraglav, that's exactly where you're Kohen Shvi'isa. So if you are deliberate in going out to a certain place, let's say, on the outer boundary of the city, 1,999 amos outside of the city, and that's where you find yourself on the outset of Shabbos, then me'ikar adin, you're allowed to go an additional 2,000 amos on Shabbos. I don't need the Rabbanon to have a special leniency and bend over backwards to enact a new takon of an Eruv with Mazon Shtei Sudos. That enactment is really breaking the rules, so to speak, because he doesn't find himself there on Erev Shabbos. He only sets up his Mazon Shtei Sudos. In fact, he may have even sent a shliach, a proxy, to set up that Mazon Shtei Sudos on his behalf. Where is he? He's back in his house. And Mikra Adin, he should be only allowed to go 2,000 amos outside the city. We're not going to give him an extra 2,000 amos based on this Erev of Mazon Shtei Sudos. We made a special enactment that wherever his Mazon is, he's going to be allowed to go an additional 2,000 amos from his mazon that was set up on Erev Shabbos. Well, that's a special leniency. And what presses the Chachamim to break new ground and enact this leniency? It's Litzorach Mitzvah. But if he physically goes out to that point, at the outskirts of the city, and at the onset of Shabbos, he is physically located at that point, that's where he was Kohen Shvi'isa with the entry of Shabbos, and that's where he gets a 2,000 amos. I don't need a special kula and a takana of Erevin, of Mazon Shtei Sudos. That's Me'ikar Adin. He was Kohen Shvi'isa Baraglav. And we don't care, according to Rabbeinu Yonason, what motivates him to want to go 2,000 amos from that point. However, Tosfos in Psachim rejects this. He says there's no difference whether or not he was Kohen Erev with Mazon Shtei Sudos or he was Kohen Erev Baraglav. In both cases, the rule is Ein ma'arvin l'dvar rishus. Now the Mishnah Berurah quotes these two opinions in the Shaar HaTzion in Siman Tov Tes Vav. And not only that, he quotes additional Rishonim And the Svara of Rabbeinu Yonasan, which is rejected by Tosfos and Pesachim, namely that Eruv Beregel is Mikra Din, whereas Pas is a special Kula, and therefore, based on Svara, we could differentiate between the two. He brings down this Shita of Rabbeinu Yonasan, and he brings another Shita of the Magid Mishnah in the name of the Ramban, that whether or not he was Ma'ariv B'Pas or he was Ma'ariv B'Regel, those are both Heter that work Mikra Din. And we find in the Sheet of Tanoim that Chumen is Doraisa, according to some Tanoim, that's certainly Rabbi Akiva. And yet we allow an Erev B'Pas or B'Regel, it means that that's considered Makomo Shel Adam, and that's going to be Mater even Chumen Doraisa. So that you could have an Ikra Din, but nevertheless, the Rabbanan are going to limit this Heter of Eruv to Dvar Mitzvah. And that is the Shita of the Balei Tosfos against Rabbeinu Yonasan. It doesn't matter one iota whether or not you set up the Eruv B'Mosen Shtei Sudos or B'Raglov. It's got to be Litzorech Dvar Mitzvah. Rabbeinu Yonasan, on the other hand, makes the distinction between an Erev which they sudos and an Erev Baraglov. He says that an Erev which they sudos pas is a special kula, and the Rabbanan restricted that kula to a Dvar Mitzvah, whereas Raglov is Mikra Din, that's where he was Kona Shvisa, and we don't need to clip his wings and restrict it to a case of Litzorch Dvar Mitzvah. Now, what is L'dvar Mitzvah? We have two examples in our Mishnah of a Beis Avel and a Beis HaMishteh. However, the Shulchan Aruch goes beyond this. And he says that L'hakbil Pnei Rabo, he knows his Rebbe is showing up from a nearby city, and he wants to go out on Shabbos, outside the city, to welcome his Rebbe. That too is L'dvar Mitzvah. And then the Shulchan Aruch goes even one step further. Let's say it's not his Rebbe. It's a friend. It's a Chaver. His Chaver is coming from the Derech. He wants to go out there and greet his Chaver on Shabbos. And it means he'll have to go outside of the limits of the city. He can be Ma'ariv, giving himself another 2,000 Amma for the purpose of being Makabel Pnei Chaver. What happens in a case, for example, of Yontif, or perhaps even Shabbos, when there is a beautiful orchard outside the Tchum of Shabbos? Can he set up an Eruv to allow what's called Teul? Teul means just to go out and enjoy nature. And Don, I thought you'd be interested in this because you have an interest in taking people for a Teul. Again, I guess in most of your cases, the Teul is for seeing a certain archaeological site, perhaps, you know, get a flavor of history or the walls of Jerusalem, etc., etc. But you might also offer a Teul to take people to just enjoy nature. And that's called a Teul in a pardes, in an orchard, to breathe the air, the pure air of nature. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that too is called Simcha and L'dvar Mitzvah. Simcha could enhance the quality of my observance of Shabbos or Yontif. And the reason I mention this to you is not just because it's relevant L'halacha L'maisa in those places where we want to go outside the Tchum of Shabbos for the sake of a Teul, but I mention it to you because we see that quality of life is also called a Dvar Mitzvah, at least with regard to Shabbos and Yontif. And this very much reminds me of a Gemara that we learned back on Daf Samach Zayin, Samach Ches, about a Chatzah that has two Pesachim. Do you remember when we were trying to determine where its primary residence is? Is it the Pesach towards the Mavui, in which case he's part of the Sheet of Mavos, because they deliver all their camel, you know, the camels carry all the wagons, and they bring all the, you know, merchandise through that Mavui, or the Pesach that he has on the other side of his house, which leads him out to a bikah, to fields and plantations where he breathes the air and he enjoys that. Where is his primary residence? Do you remember this? And we came to the conclusion that his primary residence might be that Pesach, which leads him to a beautiful bikah, possibly even to a karpav, which is an open area that's very wide, and that's where he enjoys the air. So you see that the halacha takes into consideration the quality of life. And here, in the case of an Erev Tchumen L'Dvar Mitzvah, we're saying that even for the sake of the Simcha of a Tiul, we still consider it L'Dvar Mitzvah, and therefore we'll allow him to set up his Erev Tchumen. Beyond that, he speaks about a case of an Erev for the purpose of Livroach Min HaGoyim, right? The Goyim are coming in to attack from this side, and he might suffer Begufo B'Mamono. You know, these are adversaries, these are Cossacks, or whatever they are that are coming in from that side, so I want to have an Eruv that allow me to run away on the other side. That certainly is considered L'Dvar Mitzvah. Okay, now we go on in the Gemara. Kol Shekibel Olav Mibojom Mutter. In other words, there's no Eruv unless the person for whom the Eruv was set up had a Gemiras Das, Mibojom, that he wants to rely on the Eruv. If he finds about the Eruv before Shabbos enters, and he finds out that his friend was kind enough, as a good Samaritan, to set up this Eruv for all the Bnei Ha'ir who would want to benefit from this Eruv. If he made a decision before Shabbos that he wants this Eruv, that's one thing. But let's say he made no decision whatsoever to decide to rely on this Eruv, then the Eruv is not meaningful, it's not effective for him, because when a person is Kona Shvisa at the point of his Eruv, at the Knisas HaShabbos, then he's Kona Shvisa. But if he hasn't decided yet whether he wants to be Kona Shvisa and rely on this Eruv, then the Eruv cannot be meaningful, even if he makes that decision later on during the course of Shabbos, after nightfall. Shamat mine, the Gemara says we could derive from this, ein brera, de'i yesh brera, tigle, tigale milsolim afreya demimojom havi nichol. If a person is undecided, he doesn't know which direction he wants to go on Shabbos, he makes that decision later on Shabbos, that decision, if you hold yesh brera, is relevant and effective l'mafreya retroactively to the moment in time where he was trying to figure out where he wants to go. So at that moment in time, as you look at the clock, you don't know whether you're going to want to go to the east and rely on the Eruv, or you want to go to the west and you don't want to rely on the Eruv. So you're in a state of indecisiveness. Why not allow the Eruv to be chal l'mafreya retroactively when he makes his decision? And if in fact he makes his decision that he wants to go to the east, he can rely on the Eruv that was set up on his behalf by this good Samaritan to the east. And if the Mishnah disqualifies such an Eruv because he didn't make a definite certain decision before the entry of Shabbos, it means the Mishnah is maintaining the position called Ein Brera. Omer Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, no, you don't have to derive from this Mishnah the conclusion of Ein Brera. There's no proof of that Mishnah, because when the Mishnah says Kibel Olav Mibojom, it doesn't mean that he has to be Makabel on himself, Mamish Mibojom, but rather Hodiu Velo Hodiu Ketoni. He has to know about the Eruv. He doesn't have to decide for sure, for certain, that he wants to rely on this Eruv, but at least he has to be aware of the Eruv. Once he's aware of the Eruv, we can set up a system of L'mafreya. And then if he decides during the course of Shabbos, even after nightfall, that he wants to rely on this Eruv, then we'll apply the principle of Yesh Brera. And Huvar Adovar, we have a clarification now that before Shabbos, at the time of Knias HaEruv, his Das was in fact to rely on this Eruv. He made that final decision on Shabbos. But that's only because he knew about it on Erev Shabbos. And now he's in a state of undefined das, meaning, does he want the Eruv, does he not? That decision will come later on, even after Chashecha, and we'll apply the principle of Brera. That's fine. But if in a case where he didn't even know about the Eruv, then Breyer is not going to help you. Breyer can only clarify a decision-making process, but it cannot create a willingness and an approval of the Eruv if he didn't even know about the Eruv. That far, Breyer could not possibly go. So in the light of Rav Ashi's new take, his new interpretation on the Mishnah, that Kibbul Olav Mibojom doesn't mean that he was Makabal Mamish Mibojom, that he wants the Eruv, but rather Kibbul Olav Mibojom means Hodi'uhu, he knows about it, then I can reconcile Ab Mishnah with the position of Yesh Breira. And once he knows about the Eruv, then we could apply Breira. Now, in my Gemara, there's a long, long discussion here, almost a page long, a column long, about Breira. And he goes through various sugyas in Shas about Breira. Honestly, I don't know if it's necessary for us at this point to go through this whole overview and, you know, a comprehensive worldview of Erev all of Shas, but I would like to mention one particular sugya because it's relevant to us here in Masechta Erev. And this is a Gemara on Daf Lamed Vav Amid Beis. A person wants to go on Shabbos, if you remember, to hear a drush of the Chacham, and that's outside the city. He's not sure where the Chacham is going to come from the east or from the west. So what does he do? He's a smart guy. He sets up two Erevin, one on the east and one on the west. And he makes the following declaration. If the Chacham comes on the east, I want my Erev to be Chal on the east. If he comes from the west, I want the Erev to be meaningful and be Chal on the west. So it means that the moment of Kniyasa Erev, meaning the Kniyasa Shabbos, it's not clear to him which Erev will be Kona Shvis on his behalf. And this will only be clarified later on. If the Chacham comes from the east, then Lamafreya, we have a Breira Nisbara Dover Lamafreya that he wants his Erev from the east, and that's his declaration. If he'll find out tomorrow that indeed the Chacham comes from the west, then we clarify that the Erev that he set up on the west should be the valid binding Erev. And the Gemara says that this is a Machlokes Tanoim Mavoroim about Yesh Breira or Ein Breira. Those who say Ein Breira say he cannot do so. And Bishas Kniyasa Erev, he doesn't have a clarification which Erev should be Kona, then neither of the two Erevin that he set up, neither the one on the Mizrach or the Ma'ariv, are valid and binding. However, if you hold Yesh Breira, then a person could do Maisim, he could do actions, which will only be clarified later on, and they will be valid Limafreya retroactively. And therefore, if he'll clarify later on, when he finds out the news as to where the Chacham is coming from, which direction, that he wants the Erev that he set up here to be valid, and the Erev on this side to be invalid, then we're going to apply the principle of Breira, and we'll find out during Shabbos which of the two Erevin is the Erev that he's interested in. And finally, to add one other point here, he has a case of Shnei Achim Shekibu Yerusha. There was an estate that fell to the inheritance of two brothers, and ultimately they divide up the estate so that Reuven gets this part of the estate, and in the Chalukah Shimon inherits this part of the estate. And the question is, do we apply Breira in this case? Shall we say that ki'ilu from the get-go, meaning at the moment of the father's passing, it's now clarified which Yoresh gets which Chelek, which eventually he received after Chalukah, but do we say Lamafreya back to the time of the Nefilas HaYerusha? And he gives a case where there were two sheep in the estate, Shnei Kvasim, and each one, Reuven and Shimon, is going to get one sheep. Do we say the Lechatchila, that sheep that Reuven eventually inherited after the Chalukah was really his from the get-go, from the moment of his father's death? Or do we say, no, B'shas Yerusha, at the moment of the father's death, each sheep was really shaykh to both of them. Both Reuven and Shimon are, so to speak, partners in the entire estate for both of these sheep. And later on, with Chalukah, what happens is that there's an act of kinyan, which again is a passive kind of act, not an actual physical act, in which each one is makne, right? He transfers his partnership rights to that sheep to the other brother. And if that's going to be the way we understand Chalukas HaYerusha, it's a separate kinyan, then we cannot apply the principle of Breira, even according to the Mandi Omer, who says Yesh Breira. Now, in the case of Knias Eruv, and we're saying that depends upon the Ratzon, the decision of whoever it is, we'll call him Reuven, on whose behalf, I guess you'd say, the Eruv was set up. And we want to know now if B'shas HaEruv he would have wanted the Eruv, and therefore he's Kona the Eruv, or do we say, no, this Eruv is not beneficial for him, it's detrimental for him. So then his Das, at the time that so-and-so put down the Eruv, is not clarified. He never said that, you know what, I'll make a decision tomorrow about the Eruv, but rather, on Shabbos, he has a new Hisratzus, he's Misratza, to be Kona the Eruv. Now, this is a very unique kind of Yesh Brera, because Lechora, this case in our Gemara, is more similar to the case of the two brothers. If we define Yerusha as a, or I should say, if we define Chalukas HaYerusha, when they actually divvy up the inheritance, that is a Haknah, it's a real new kinyan, in which Reuven now acquires ownership on the Keves, this one, and Shimon on his Keves, then we won't apply the principle of Breira in such a case. You know, I'm just thinking out loud, this might be relevant, Lahavdil, in tax law, you know. How do we view tax law? Is it basically, if my father dies, I sort of, what's the word I want to use? I step into his shoes, then maybe that's not taxable. I'm really just, my father in a different body. Or do we say no? That at the time of the Chalukah, when you divvy up the inheritance, the estate, that's a new kinyan. And in halachic terms, that's a question of yesh breira or ain breira. And maybe even if I hold yesh breira in general, in this case, I cannot set up breira to create a kinyan lamafreya when the kinyan was only effectuated later on at the time of the Chalukas HaYerusha. But it could be relevant, lahavdil, in a comparative case of tax law with regard to inheritance. And Don, would you happen to be able to fill me in? Doesn't it depend upon how large of an inheritance it is? Like there's certain, ceiling, let's say $20,000, is not taxable, and then beyond that it is taxable. How does it work with inheritance? Is inheritance taxable?
It's talking Israel or America?
Ah, okay, you're a big London here because you're an actuary for both countries. Let's start with America. In America, okay. doesn't it depend upon the size of the inheritance, the value?
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you clearly.
Okay, so the first thing is the beneficiary is not taxed.
At all, no matter how many millions of dollars.
No, because the tax is on the estate. So, if the estate is taxed, then the beneficiary just gets net of any taxes that have already been paid by the estate. So in effect, the beneficiary is paying the tax, but it's not considered as if it's... Some states used to have rules that, depending upon your degree of relationship, then the rates were different, you know.
But is there theoretically a possibility, Don, that inheritance is not taxable in any shape or form? Meaning if the inheritance is $1 million, then the benefit...
Yeah, there is such
a possibility.
Yeah, today there's a $10 million or a $20 million. $10 million for each decedent. So a husband and wife have a $20 million exemption. So they can. So if the husband and wife have an estate listed $20 million, they pass it tax-free to their to whoever they're passing it to.
Right. Which is really interesting because in Lumdishit terms, from a, you know, if you put on your halachic thinking cap, it's tantamount to saying that we're not creating a brand new transaction here by dividing the estate. We're really going back to the original inheritance. And it's almost as if the beneficiary sort of, again, if I could use this term, I don't know if in a court of law it would be meaningful, but it's as if they step into the shoes of their parents who are bequeathing this inheritance. But if on the other hand you're talking about tax law and beneficiaries who have to, in one sense other, either because the government is going to tax the estate and in effect the beneficiaries are paying that tax and that's subtracted from what they inherit, then you're talking about a situation where Ein Brera, meaning it's almost like a brand new kinyan and any transaction is taxable. Okay, I'm just using this as a broad analogy, obviously. You know, I'm always fascinated when there's an overlap between halacha and secular law. In any event, just to leave you with the bottom line here, there was a Gadol B'Yisrael that lived about, I would say, maybe 75 years ago. His name was Rav Shimon Shkop. And my father, Zichron Levra, missed his class by 1 year because my father was too young when he gave classes at Yeshiva University. Then it wasn't called Yeshiva University, it was called Rabbeinu Yitzchak Khan. So my father missed it. His older colleague, who was the Rav later on of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Rabbi Silver, he was 1 year older than my father, so he got to hear Rav Shimon Shkop. And Rav Shimon Shkop taught at Yeshiva University for about 8 months. And he came up with this analysis of our sugya here in Erevin, and he says that if setting up an Erev Tchumen is a kind of a kinyan, in which, let's say, the Good Samaritan here is setting up a Mazon Shtei Sudos on behalf of, let's call him Reuven, then Reuven is going to have to make a kinyan on the Eruv, and through that Eruv he's Kona Shvisa, then it's impossible to understand this Gemara of Brera. Because again, in the case of a new kinyan, you cannot apply the principle of Brera. So if you're only dealing with Das, and does he want the Eruv, does he not want the Eruv, is it in his interest to go to the east, or to the west, and so forth and so on, that's where you can apply the principle of Brera. But in the case, like, for example, dividing up an estate, if I would assume that the estate and its division is now a new kinyan, we're not going to apply the principle of Brera. And if I assume that in Eruv, at some point, the person for whom, on whose behalf the Eruv was being set up, we'll call it the recipient, we'll call him Reuven, he has to make an acquisition of the Eruv in order for it to be operative and effective on his behalf, then how does the Gemara apply the principle of Brera? This is the research project of Reb Shimon Shkop. And he, you know, tries to analyze it in different ways. I just wanted to make you aware of that issue. Now the Gemara wants to know, what's the status of a katan with regard to Erevin? Omar Rav Asi, katan ben sheish, yotze bi Eruv imo. If a mother makes an Eruv for herself, then included in that Eruv is her child who is less than 6 years old. And we'll have to understand why the cutoff point is the age of six. In other words, normally we say that if you have two Jews and one person sets up an Eruv, in order for that Eruv to be effective for another Jew, there has to be a process of Zochin the Adam Shel Bafanav. In some sense, you know, Reuven has to be Zochin the Eruv on behalf of Shimon. The exception to that rule is a mother with her child. Again, if the child is less than six. And she doesn't have to go through any sort of a process by which she is Zochen, the Eruv, on behalf of her son, who's, let's call him, 5 years old. But rather, even though she was not Zochen in, you know, giving a chelek of the Mazon Shtei Sudas on behalf of her son, she didn't set up the Eruv on his behalf. Nevertheless, the Tchum Shabbos of the son is defined by her Tchum Shabbos. So once the Eruv is effective on her behalf, then we apply the principle of Kigufo. Let me try to understand. If you have two personalities, two persona, two entities in legal terms, then you need Zochin, that want the Eruv of Reuven can only be effective on behalf of Shimon if Reuven was Zochen the Eruv on behalf of Shimon. But if you have a principle called Kigufo, you can obviate the whole need of being Zochen on behalf of someone else, because that person for whom the Eruv is also going to be Chal in an expanded scope is Kigufo. It's like an extension of that first person. And Tosfos says that this problem, this principle of kigufo in the case of a child less than six, will completely circumvent the need of litzorach mitzvah. The child who's 5 years old has no need to go out to be menachem avel or to be sameach chasam v'kala. There's no element of litzorach mitzvah here. So why is the eruv effective on behalf of this 5 year old? There's no compliance with the requirement of Litzorach Mitzvah. The answer is we're completely circumventing the requirement of Litzorach Mitzvah because of this principle of Kigufo. And therefore, he's Yotze be Eruv Imo of his mother. Now, the Magen Avraham wants to introduce another element here called Chinuch. That even though the child is only 5 years old, but he's already mature enough for chinuch, to be educated in mitzvah, so the mother, who's going to be menachem avel, and avail herself of the extra 2,000 am chutz l'tchum through this eruv, for the sake of nichum avelim, takes along her son, who is old enough to be included in chinuch, and he's not too old, meaning beyond six, to be considered an entity, an independent personality of his own. Now, this Magen Avraham is a pella for me, because the last thing I want to do, I think, as a father, is to take a five-year-old boy to a Nicham Avelin. That's what I would think. But the Magen Avraham is against me. That even for chinuch, for mitzvahs avelus, to be menachem and avil, we bring the child along. Now keep in mind that this is a one-way street. What I mean to say is that the concept of avelus goes in two directions. There's the avil who's mourning and grieving, and there's us guys who are coming to comfort the avelim. These are two separate mitzvahs. I would never believe that the Magen Avraham, in the context of chinuch, would require a parent to be mechanic the child in the mitzvah of avelus. Which means, if Nebuch, again, I it's hard for me to get the words out of my mouth, but if parents have to sit Shiva on the loss of a child, Rachmana Litzlan, the Ramban says it was left out of the Torah because the Torah couldn't even mention such a case. But anyway, that's the law. So now, they have a child who's Baruch Hashem alive and well. He's flourishing. He's 5 years old. His brother or sister died. There would be no mitzvah chinuch to educate the child and train the child to sit Shiva and experience grief and mourning. The child is too young for that. But now let's flip it to the other side of the table. We're not sitting Shiva, we're going to comfort those mourners who are sitting Shiva. Here, according to the Magen Avraham, we bring along our child who is 5 years old, who's mature enough to understand the concept of Nichum Avelun. Again, it might be subjective, I don't know, maybe, you know, it depends on the maturity level of the child, but generally speaking, if the child is close to 6 years old, he's capable of understanding Nichum Avelim, again, on his level. And we begin to train the child in Nichum Avelim. And this just completely circumvents Tosis's problem. Tosis wants to know, how could an Erev Tchumen, which has to be Litzarch Mitzvah, that was set up by the mother for the purpose of Nichum Avelim, be effective for the child? And Tosis has to come up with this bombastic theory or definition called kigufo, so you don't need litzorich mitzvah as far as the child is concerned, because the child is swept up in an effective eruv by virtue of the fact that he is connected kigufo shel ima, even though there's no litzorich mitzvah. So the Magen Avraham says, forget about all that. The mother's going to take the child along on this trip of eruv of nicham avelim for the sake of the mitzvah of chinuch, because the child is 5.5 years old and is capable of chinuch for nichum avim. It would seem to me, again, just dok v'tishkach, you know, this is very limited liability, that Tosis might hold that chinuch is not a mitzvah. What do I mean? How can I say such a thing, that chinuch is not a mitzvah? I mean, that what I mean to say is the mitzvah chinuch is incumbent upon the mother. The child himself or herself has no connection to the mitzvah chinuch. The child will be trained like a robot, you know, to be programmed to do mitzvahs. But that doesn't impose any sort of obligation or merit the child in any sort of kiyum mitzvah of chinuch. So let's say, for example, I have a lulav, and I train my child who's 5 years old to shake the lulav. That's my obligation as a parent vis-a-vis my child. It's not my child's obligation. And I would even go as far as to say that the child is 12.9 years old in the case of a male, or 11.9 in the case of a girl, of a female. The mitzvah is not incumbent upon the child. The child is part of a mitzvah until the child becomes bar or bas mitzvah. The obligation of chinuch is on the parent. And then Tosis has the problem, then, how can the eruv of the mother be effective for the child when the child has no mitzvah? Because the mitzvah of chinuch is on the parent. And the answer is kigufo. Says Tosis, well, kigufo only applies up to the age of 6, as we'll soon see, but not beyond the age of 6. So let me just read to you the summary of Tosfos here in the Masifti. Writes, Nikba tchumo shel hayeled kitchum imo lefi shu nidon kigufo me'achar shu karuch achrei imo v'yeno yochel biladeho. Interesting. The kigufo that sets up this unique relationship between the child and the mother is because eino yochel below imo. The child is totally dependent upon his mother. Again, I know children who are 5 years old who are very precocious, and they run around, they mistadrim levad, as we'd say in Hebrew. But those are the exceptional cases. The halacha works with objective shiurim, and the assumption is that up to the age of six, the child is karach achar imo, v'eino yachol biladeha. Now again, if we're talking about crossing the street, I understand very well. You know, you have to take your child by the hand, and the child is less than six. You've got to make sure you take the child by the hand to cross the street. You don't send the child to a supermarket to buy, you know, for you, and the child has to cross the street. The child is too young. Child is now 6 years old, is somewhat independent, and can cross the street on his own. Let's see if we can just add another piece to the Gemara. Meisvei, I have a brisa that contradicts Rav Asi. The brisa says that katan shetzarach li'imo yotze be'erev imo. If the child is dependent upon its mother, then it could be included in the erev of its mother. But v'sheh, if the child is a little bit older, v'ein tzarach li'imo, ain't a yotze be'erev imo. Now, the brisa doesn't give us an age. When do you consider the child eino tzarich imo? And we're going to assume, based on everything we know until now, the child is eino is tzarich imo because he's less than 6 years old. Utna nami, and we have another mission in Sukkah, ki hai gavna. And the Mishnah says, "Katan she'eino tzarich li'imo chayav b'sukkah." If the child is independent of his mother or her mother, then the mitzvah chinuch mirabanan kicks in. But a katan who's tzarich li'imo, he's totally dependent on his mother. He hasn't reached that age in which there's a mitzvah chinuch. Then the child doesn't have to be brought out to the sukkah. Va'vinim ba. And we ask the question on this Mishnah. Ezu katan she'eno tzarech li'imo. Amri debe Rav Yane, kol she'nifne v'ein imo kanchosa. If in bodily movements, you know, in the bathroom, he can be, you know, he's well toil and trained, and he's able to clean himself up after he defecates. Or Rav Shimon gives another alternative shir, kol shenir mishnas v'enekore ima. He wakes up from his bed, gets dressed on his own, he's not yelling for his mother. And we see clearly that the shiurim for katan of tzarch l'imo, tzarch, or leino tzarch l'imo, that are established respectively by Rav Yanai and Rav Shimon ben Lakish, have nothing to do with the age of six, but rather they are defined by either Nifna or by Neir. So the Gemara says that it's a little bit odd that these Brisos and these Mishnayos, when they determine a Katan as being Tzarech Li'imo or Ein Tzarech Li'imo, they don't mention what our Mishnah mentions, and that is whether or not he has reached a certain age. I meant to say Rav Asi. The Rav Asi says it's all dependent upon a katan ben sheish. He's considered tzarech li'imo. And if he's less than ben sheish, if he's more than ben sheish, then he's eino tzarech li'imo, and therefore the Erev is not chal on his behalf. The Gemara is going to clearly derive from Reish Lakish and Rav Yanai that we're talking about a younger age of Eini Momakan Chaso and Neir Mishnos of Eino Kore Ima Ima as being either a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old, but certainly not the requirement of Rav Asi of 6, or shall we say the leniency of Rav Asi that allows even for a child who's 4 and 5 years old and up to be considered as Korach Achrei Imo. and to validate the Eruv on his behalf. Now, earlier, we mentioned that Tosfos, the Ramachsil Katan, at the bottom of Daf Pei Beis, established that even though we said that you require a tzorech mitzvah for an Erev, and the Katan is not mechuyev in mitzvahs, nevertheless, he can be yotze chutz l'tchum be'erev imo, because e efshala lanicha mishum shehu karach achreha. And she cannot set up an Eruv without allowing that Eruv to be effective for a child, because the child is always with her. And the Katan, there's a mitzvah l'chancho, so you have to take him with you to the Bar Mitzvah, as we mentioned the name of the Magen Avraham. Now again, all this applies to a Katan who has some basic element of Havana. He's mature enough to understand, and therefore we consider him Higiel Lechinuch. I want to mention the Trumas HaDeshen. He writes that later in the Gemara we're going to say that this din of Keben Sheish Yotze B'Erev Imo is to be interpreted as a case of Ein Aviv Nimtza B'Ir. We didn't get to that yet. And he raises the following difficulty. He says the Rishonim, the Rian Tosvis and other Rishonim, they say that there's no mitzvah chinuch unless the father is there and not the mother. So what shaykh is chinuch here in our Mishnah in a case of the mother without the father? And Tosvis wants to prove from our Mishnah that chinuch is shaykh both to the father, and it's obligatory even on the mother. Now, as far as question of Tosfos, that the reason why Katan is Yotze be'erev imo is because he's kegufa, and her erev is meaningful even as far as her son, is according to some Rishonim, since the erev l'dvar mitzvah, it's mutal leches af l'dvar reshus, if you recall, that once you've set up the erev and it's effective, because you did so l'tzorch mitzvah, now you were konish visa, and that's your ikur makom shvisa. You can move 2,000 amah beyond that, even for a dvar reshus. So now, in our case, the eruv apparently was done kiddin. We don't know that there was any problem or psul in this eruv. So therefore, once she set up the eruv liatzma for the purpose of a dvar mitzvah, she was konish visa. Is memela the katan is nitval oleha hareu kigufa and mutal olotzes. There's no issue here of tosis of eno chai b'mitzvahs, because the mother herself is allowed to go even for dvar reshus once she was konish visa, unless we assume that tosis holds like Rashi, that even after the Erev was set up for a Dvar Mitzvah, you're limited and bound to, in your reliance on the leniency of the Erev going Chutz L'Tchum, only to a Dvar Mitzvah, also Lotzeis L'Dvar Reshus. Now, a Katan is not Muzer on Tchumen, right? He's not Chayiv in any Mitzvahs. So why do we need that the Erev should work and be operative on his behalf? Why not just say he's not Muzar on Tchumen? He's allowed to walk a million amas. And the one who addresses this question, which you'll see in the Shulchan Aruch, but not explicitly, says that im lokein ye osel yadam gadol et savos lo lotzeis chutz l'tchuma ir mishum iser Safie, that it would be also for a gadol, meaning his past bar mitzvah, to command the child to leave the tchum and go yotzi chutz tchum. That's going to cause it called an iser safie. It's like giving non-kosher food to the katan, where you actually pick it up and you give it to the katan. So therefore, if the katan reaches has reached already the age of chinuch, then his father would have to be mafresh him shelo yetzeh chutz l'tchum, to guarantee that he doesn't go outside the tchum, and that applies bein b'shabbos, bein b'yontif. So to take the child by the hand and bring him chutz l'tchum, or you know, to command him or allow him to go chutz l'tchum, that might be comparable to safia b'yadayim, and that's prohibited. So even though the katan is certainly not included in the isur tchumin, but you can't do anything to cause the katan actively to go chutz l'tchum. The Meiri adds a point here: if chas shalom this child is an orphan from his father, then he's yotze b'tchum b'erev shel aviv. But otherwise, if there's a father and a mother, then he's yotze only b'erev shel mother. She's the one who takes care of him. Here's where we're going to stop. Wish you all a great Shabbos.